A year ago this week, the Taliban took control of Afghanistan. And since then, the country's already fragile economy has gone into a tailspin, and millions of Afghans are facing starvation.
What happened in August was a huge shock because all of a sudden, even the limited aid flows that were still continuing to the country were cut off.
That's our colleague Jessica Donati, who lived in Afghanistan for 4 years.
Many international banks and companies stopped dealing with Afghanistan pretty much overnight. The U.S. and its allies, the main employer in the country, or at least the wealthiest employer in the country, left. And so suddenly you had this huge spike in joblessness along with the near standstill of the banking system. And that delivered a huge shock. So the economy has gone into freefall.
The country needs money. And it has money saved in foreign banks in the U.S. and in Europe. But there's a problem. That money is frozen. The U.S. and its allies are refusing to hand it over to the Taliban.
What's now up for debate is what should happen to this money. Should they give it back to the Taliban government because the economy badly needs this money? So do you give it back and try and help the population that way? Or do you continue to use it to try to press the Taliban to do some of the things that the U.S. wants to see the Taliban do?
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Linebaugh. It's Wednesday, August 17th. Coming up on the show, the U.S. has Afghanistan's money, and the Taliban wants it back.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Afghanistan's central bank has about $9 billion stored overseas. This money is known as foreign reserves. Lots of countries do this. They hold foreign currencies to help stabilize their own currency and guard against major economic disruptions. Afghanistan has most of its reserves, $7 billion, in the U.S.
My understanding is that this money is held in foreign currency reserves because it's safer to hold your money in dollars or in euros than it is in Afghani. The Afghan currency is very volatile. It has lost a lot of its value. Over the years, it continues to lose its value. So it's better to hold your assets in something that's a little bit more stable so that when you do need to inject money into the local economy, you have more of it than you would if you were just holding your assets in Afghani.
And so you keep that money in the U.S. system.
That's right. A lot of it is held in New York, for example, but some of it is in Germany, some of it is in Switzerland, and these are just decisions that the previous government made because these seemed like safe places to hold reserves. At the time, there was no question that they wouldn't be able to access them because the Afghan government in Kabul was fully backed by the U.S., and the U.S. and its allies bankrolled the government.
So last August, when the Taliban took over, what happened to this money?
So following the Taliban's sort of seizing of power, both the U.S. and these European countries froze the reserves because they were worried that the money could end up in Taliban hands and then ultimately be used towards terrorist organizations or other operations that they would view as illegal. And so to prevent the money from falling into the wrong hands, they froze these assets.
So they froze the money. What was the U.S. asking for?
Do a better job of combating terrorism. you know, when you promise that girls can access high school, that you will actually reopen high schools for girls. So these are all things that the US wants to see happen. And so having all of this money held and frozen is a good way, some people think, to push the Taliban towards the sort of behavior that the US and also many other countries in the world want to see.
So how did the Taliban react to this?
From the Taliban's perspective, the problem is the US and its allies, that they are the ones that have cut off money that belongs to the Afghan people. They see themselves as the rightful rulers of Afghanistan. They waged this war for 20 years, and now they feel that Afghans have a chance to dictate their own future. They viewed the previous government as a US puppet, and so they feel that the problems that they're experiencing are not their fault, but the fault of the world, who have cut them off from the banking system and from the chance of economic survival.
The two sides were at an impasse and needed to sit down to try to find a way to get this money back to Afghanistan.
Gradually, over the past months, there's been this process of engagement between the US and the Taliban in different settings to try and figure out what to do with this money, in consultation also with other US allies, particularly ones that hold access to these reserves and who have decades-long interest in Afghanistan's stability, to try and figure out what would be the appropriate way to manage the money.
What came of these talks?
Perhaps the first big piece of news that brought this topic into the general public was the decision by the Biden administration to take half of this money, which was held in the US, so $3.5 billion, and set it aside for victims of terrorism.
What was the logic behind that idea?
There's been this litigation going on for years by the victims of terrorism from different attacks trying to get compensation. And so this seemed a way to compensate them, because the 9/11 victims, the attack, Al-Qaeda was based in Afghanistan at the time. So using money that came from Afghanistan to compensate victims to the Biden administration made sense. At the same time, they tried to sort of sweeten this announcement by saying that some of the rest of the money could be used for humanitarian aid. So that was a sort of carrot, saying, well, that money that was frozen, we can unfreeze it perhaps and release some of it into aid and help ease some of the challenges with hunger and with the healthcare system that's on the verge of collapse.
But this plan to give half the reserves to victims of 9/11 didn't go over well.
This move caused a huge amount of outrage in Afghanistan and amongst the Afghan diaspora, because they viewed this as money that belonged to the Afghan people and not money that should be allocated to victims of terrorism who the Afghan people don't owe a debt to, and that taking away this money deprives millions of people from the potential of economic recovery, and to take this money away from a country that faces mass starvation is a very bad idea.
And the other part of the plan, to use the reserves on humanitarian aid, that raised different concerns. Some economists said it could end up hurting the Afghan economy in the long term.
Many economists think that if you use that money to spend on short-term humanitarian aid to feed the Afghan population this year or next year, very quickly you get to the point where the central bank has no more reserves left. And that would be very bad for the Afghan economy and any chances of recovery.
Coming up, the curveball that would dash any hope of releasing the money.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/journal. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
U.S. negotiators said the only way they would unfreeze the Afghan central bank's reserves was if the Taliban agreed to a handful of conditions. Things like allowing Afghan girls to go to high school and proving that Taliban officials were not cooperating with terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda. And then in July...
Back to that breaking news now coming out of Washington and specifically from the White House.
The United States conducted an operation that killed Al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri.
And this is the most significant counterterrorism operation, as the Americans are calling it, since the death of Osama bin Laden.
Well, it turns out that for a number of months, the CIA was watching a guest house in the center of Kabul in an area where rich Afghan families live, where all of the Western embassies were located, because the leader of Al-Qaeda had at some point crossed over into Afghanistan, and Zawahiri, people had thought that he might be dead for years. Then he, earlier this year, began to publish these videos and propaganda, which showed that he was alive after all and becoming more active. And it turns out the reason was that he was comfortably located in Kabul, to the point that he had a habit of going out onto his terrace in the morning and enjoying some of the fresh air and the beautiful view of the mountains. And on one morning when the CIA decided that they had a good view of him, they sent a drone strike and killed him.
This house where Zawahiri was living was next door to a residence owned by Afghanistan's interior minister, a man named Sirajuddin Haqqani, who the U.S. alleges is also a terrorist. The Taliban has said it was unaware of Zawahiri's presence in the country.
How did that strike affect the talks related to these foreign currency reserves?
Well, the strike validating the argument of people who said that the Taliban clearly have close ties to Al-Qaeda and that releasing this money to the government, even in a way that is very closely monitored, is risky because they evidently have close ties to Al-Qaeda leadership. And so it has kind of frozen, for the moment, efforts to release some of this money.
The U.S. lead negotiator, an official named Tom West, told Jessica this airstrike has put all negotiations with the Taliban on hold.
When I had a chance to speak to Tom West more recently, he told me that after the strike, because of the huge concerns that they have about the Taliban's links to Al-Qaeda, they don't see that recapitalizing the Afghan central bank in the near future as any kind of option. So everything is now on pause. The idea also that giving some of this money towards humanitarian aid, according to my conversations with other administration officials, is off the table as well, at least in the near term.
What did people you spoke with say that this decision to keep the reserves frozen will mean for the Afghan people?
I mean, there are members of the Afghan Central Bank who worked on the bank before the Taliban came, who believe that it performs a critical function in the Afghan economy, and who say that keeping these funds frozen will have a devastating effect on the economy. And these effects are the ones that we're seeing now, because we're seeing, you know, rising inflation, we're seeing difficulty purchasing imports, we're seeing the banking system almost ground to a halt where it's very difficult to get cash out because the banks limit the amount of money that you can withdraw. So all of these things have had a hugely suffocating effect on the economy. And so the view is that if you continue to keep this money out of the Afghan economy, it will crush growth and it will lead to increased rates of unemployment and starvation, at least in the immediate term.
And how does the U.S. government respond to that?
The U.S., in public statements, particularly the White House, hasn't gone into a lot of detail about their policy. They haven't really explained why they are taking the view that they have. But the view is that this money needs to be preserved for the long run for the bank, because if all of the bank's foreign reserves are spent on buying food this year and next year, that means that in the future, the bank will have no tools to help manage the economy. And the hope is that things will improve and that the Taliban government will normalize.
And so in the short term, for the people of Afghanistan who are suffering from malnutrition and hunger, there's little sense of relief on the horizon.
In the short term, the U.S. is saying there's going to be no progress on this issue. There's no end to the problems that we're seeing. I don't think it will also end necessarily the efforts to still find a solution to all this, to try and push the Taliban towards some of the steps that they want to see, to use this money as leverage. So the money is still on the table and the U.S. still wants to be able to ease some of the suffering, but the path to getting there is still very distant.
That's all for today, Wednesday, August 17th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Margherita Stancati. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.